Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Child Pornography and Mandatory Minimums Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 1st, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Lockhart v. United States. Petitioner Avondale Lockhart pleaded guilty to possessing child pornography. Because Lockhart had a prior state court conviction for first-degree sexual abuse involving his adult girlfriend, his pre-sentence report concluded that he was subject to a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence enhancement, which is triggered by prior state convictions for crimes relating to aggravated sexual abuse, or abusive sexual conduct involving a minor or ward. Lockhart argued that the limiting phrase involving a minor or ward applied to all three state crimes, so his prior conviction did not trigger the enhancement. Disagreeing, the district court applied the mandatory minimum. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit affirmed. By a vote of 6-2, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Second Circuit. Justice Sotomayor delivered the opinion of the court, holding that the phrase involving a minor or ward in 2252b2 modifies only abusive sexual conduct. Thus, Lockhart's prior conviction for sexual abuse of an adult was encompassed by 2252b2, and the 10-year mandatory minimum applied. Justice Sotomayor's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, and Alito. Justice Kagan filed the dissenting opinion, in which Justice Breyer joined. To discuss the case, we have Aaron Sheely, who is Assistant Professor at University of Calgary Faculty of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Sheely.
On March 1, 2016, in an opinion authored by Justice Sotomayor, the Supreme Court decided Lockhart v. United States. Lockhart construed a provision of the federal child pornography statute imposing increased maximum sentences for offenders who have previously been convicted for certain sexual offenses under state law. The provision, 18 U.S.C. 2252b2, provides that defendants convicted of possessing child pornography are subject to a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence and an increased maximum sentence if they have a prior conviction under state law related to the following, quote, aggravated sexual abuse, or abusive sexual conduct involving a minor or ward, unquote. The petitioner, Avondale Lockhart, had pled guilty to possessing child pornography. Because Lockhart had a prior New York State conviction for first-degree sexual abuse of his then 53-year-old girlfriend, the trial judge applied the 10-year mandatory minimum in Section B2. Lockhart's theory on appeal is that the last phrase in Section B2, quote, involving a minor or ward, end quote, applies to all three itemized sexual offenses, aggravated sexual abuse, or abusive sexual conduct, and not just the last one. In other words, he argues his sexual abuse of his girlfriend should not have qualified him for the increased minimum because she was not either a minor or ward. To resolve this case, the court and the dissenting justices got deep into the weeds of statutory interpretation. Dickens once described the role of judges as tripping one another up on slippery precedents, groping knee-deep in technicalities, running their goat hair and horse hair warded heads against walls of words. This case is one of those situations where Dickens' view of judging seems somewhat accurate. Justice Sotomayor's opinion for the majority turns on a canon of statutory interpretation called the rule of the last antecedent. According to this canon, a limiting clause or phrase should ordinarily be read as modifying only the noun or phrase that precedes it. The dissent, authored by Justice Kagan and joined by Justice Breyer, relies on a competing canon of interpretation known as the series qualifier canon. According to this canon, where there is a straightforward, parallel construction that involves all nouns or verbs in a series, a modifier at the end of the list normally applies to the entire series. So Justice Kagan opens her dissent with an example from daily life. Imagine, she says, a friend told you that she hoped to meet, quote, an actor, director, or producer involved with the new Star Wars movie. You would know immediately that she wanted to meet an actor from the Star Wars cast, not an actor, for example, in the latest Zoolander. Justice Kagan didn't concede that there might be other reasons why that preference would be obvious, but that's a question for another day. The majority addresses the dissent's concern there by pointing out that the world of everyday language is, unfortunately, not terribly relevant to federal legislation. The court notes that Section 2252b2's list of state predicates is hardly intuitive. No one would mistake its odd repetition and inelegant phrasing for a reflection of the accumulated wisdom of everyday speech patterns. It would be as if a friend asked you to get her tart lemons, or sour fruit from Mexico. If you brought back lemons from California, but your friend insisted she was using customary speech and obviously asked for Mexican fruit only, you would be forgiven for disagreeing on both counts. In any case, beyond this war of interpretive canons, the majority's decision in Lockhart seems to turn on the structural logic of Section 2252b2. The provision establishes the same sentencing minimums and maximums for offenders with prior state records, like Lockhart, as for offenders who have previously violated Chapter 109A of the Federal Criminal Code. Chapter 109A is divided into three parts: aggravated sexual abuse, and sexual abuse of a minor or a ward. The first two parts are not limited to abuse of minors. On this evidence, then, the court concludes that the structure of the clause directed to state offenders was intended to parallel the one directed at federal offenders. Therefore, Lockhart was subject to the 10-year minimum applicable to possessors of child pornography who had prior convictions for sexual abuse of any victim under either state or federal law. The majority and dissent also differ on the relevance of the legislative history of Section 2252. The dissent cites a report from the Senate Judiciary Committee and a letter from the DOJ to the House Committee on the Judiciary, which both mention mandatory minimums for individuals charged with child pornography who have prior convictions for child molestation. The court basically concludes that neither of these documents should be understood as describing the full reach of Section 2252. A final issue with which both the petitioner and the dissent raise is what's called the rule of lenity. This is a canon of statutory interpretation that's specific to criminal law, and it says that where statutory language is ambiguous, it should be resolved in favor of a criminally accused. So in this case, if we're not certain how to interpret 2252, we should go with the canon of interpretation that will allow the accused to escape punishment. The majority does not buy that. So Justice Sotomayor tells us that the availability of two different canons of construction does not immediately trigger the rule of lenity. In this case in particular, the issue can be resolved with a canon most appropriate to the context. Therefore, 2252 will be construed as having its broader scope and allowing for the heightened punishment of offenders who had been convicted of sexual abuse or aggravated sexual abuse of anyone under state law, not merely minors or wards. So although this case is primarily a case related to statutory interpretation, there are some substantive effects worth thinking about in terms of the impact it will have on enforcement policy. Obviously, child pornography has been a major DOJ priority in terms of enforcement, and there are some critics of the current enforcement regime who think that punishment is currently excessive for the crime of possession of child pornography. This argument turns on sort of traditional ideas about culpability under the criminal law, the idea being that possession is not directly harming children in the same way that actual child molestation might be. And so for that reason, perhaps the laws on child pornography are being excessively draconian to defendants who are only guilty of possession. So in this case, obviously, if you have a defendant who is guilty of possession, and in the past has only been guilty of sexual abuse of an adult, we're imposing an even higher sentence on someone who has not actually physically laid hands on a child. So those who are likely to object to this outcome in this case are probably going to be those who think that punishment for child pornography should not be as severe as punishment for child molestation. Now, the opposite side of this debate, obviously, relates to the actual effects of mere possession of child pornography. There's the familiar argument that even by creating a market for child pornography, these defendants are committing a terrible wrong, which is going to cause future children to be victimized by this industry. Therefore, there is a powerful deterrence argument. I would note that there's also an increasing body of literature on the subject of the psychological effects of child pornography to existing victims, knowing that other people are watching the images of them being exploited from their childhood. So there's a theory that says essentially every time someone is guilty of possession of child pornography, they're essentially re-victimizing the original victim because that victim has this awareness that their images are being circulated. So that school of thought would say there's nothing wrong with imposing significant punishments on people for quote-unquote mere possession of child pornography. And in this case, if that person also happens to have committed some kind of sex crime in the past, we can all sleep well at night knowing that this person is going to have a mandatory 10-year minimum. So that debate will continue on in various contexts and incarnations, and Lockhart, I suspect, will just be a somewhat minor case in this progression of jurisprudence on child pornography.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUScast. For more episodes of SCOTUScast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.